Listen up, Nerd Clan. This episode of the Potterverse is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. It's a one-stop shop for all things beauty, skincare, makeup. Now, I know a lot of us right now are wearing masks. We may not be leaving our house that often, but for those few times that you do leave the house, you might want a little pick-me-up. Or maybe you just want to take this time to delve into some amazing skincare. Well, speaking of skincare, my favorite item right now, it's been flying off the shelves, is my brand new eye cream. It tightens the under-eye bags, helps with darkness of your under-eye circles, and helps also with the fine lines. Oh, Blake showing his off. He needs to be using it. You're not using it every night. You've gotten out of the habit.
That's because I don't sleep at night.
You don't.
Thanks to our children.
This might help you look like you actually do sleep. So if you're suffering the way Blake's suffering, if you just want to try something new out, I do have a 14-day love it guarantee. If you do not love any of my products at MinuteWithMary.com, you get 100% of your money back. And my eye cream this month for the month of August is on sale. You can find out that at MinuteWithMary.com/discount. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. And welcome. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake. And as much as I hated the last chapter, I love this chapter that much more.
I was hoping that this is exactly what you were going to say.
Love this chapter. I'm all about this chapter's life. The Forbidden Forest is where it's at.
Forbidden Forest is where literally everything is at. Like, yes. So many major pivotal things happen in this Forbidden Forest. It's funny that it's forbidden because all the cool stuff happens here. So, of course, this is going to be an incredibly exciting episode for us in this podcast to talk about this exciting chapter, The Forbidden Forest, chapter 15.
We're almost done. We got two more chapters, right? Is it two or three?
It might just be two more chapters. I think it is two more chapters.
Two more chapters, 16 and 17. That's it.
Yes. So, of course, this is The Forbidden Forest. And the quote that I wanted to read you, it's a little different than what I was thinking. But I just feel like it speaks so much depth into the
future. What do you
mean
it was different than what you were thinking?
Well, I was thinking I was going to read something a little like, this is what happens in this chapter. Oh, but okay. I wanted to get a little deep.
Wait, what was it like?
This is what happens in this chapter.
Okay.
All right.
Just checking.
So, good evening, said Ronan. Students, are you? And do you learn much up at that school? A bit, said Hermione timidly. A bit. Well, that's something, Ronan sighed. He flung back his head and stared at the sky. Mars is bright tonight. Yeah, said Hagrid, glancing up too. Listen, I'm glad we run into you, Ronan, because there's a unicorn been hurt. You seen anything? Ronan didn't answer immediately. He stared unblinkingly upward, then sighed again. Always the innocent are the first victims, he said. So it has been for ages past, so it is now. Yeah, said Hagrid, but have you seen anything, Ronan? Anything unusual? Mars is bright tonight, Ronan repeated, while Hagrid watched him impatiently. Unusually bright. Yeah, but I was meaning anything unusual a bit near home, said Hagrid. So you haven't noticed anything strange? Yet again, Ronan took a while to answer. At last he said, the forest hides many secrets.
I love that you chose this entry, Mary.
This passage
is phenomenal. In fact, if I were to choose one passage from this chapter, it absolutely would have been that one.
Oh my gosh, good thing we're married.
I'm kind of down. Well, I'm down with you.
Oh, I mean, thank
obviously.
You. That's
obvious. But I'm down with the centaurs.
Agreed. Agreed.
I just think they're awesome.
We're going to have major centaur love for those of you listening. So if you're not on the centaur train, choo-choo, hop on board, because that's what it's going to be like tonight, the centaur
absolutely.
Love train. All right, so before we get into this podcast, though, we wanted to remind you that you can find us on social media at Mary and Blake. You can head on over to maryandblake.com to see all of our other podcasts, and we would love it if you took a moment of your time to leave us a written review and 5-star rating in your podcast app of choice. This helps a lot. loads of other people find out about the podcast. You can also head to jointhenerdclan.com. This is a way for you to fiscally contribute to make sure that this continues to happen. Obviously, with COVID-19 hitting the world, things have been very different for a lot of people, for everyone right now in the world, pretty much. And if you could spend as little as $2 a month, it's less than a cup of coffee, it helps contribute towards our media company here to keep these podcasts going. Podcasts that most of which are free, just like this, the Potterverse. So if it brings you joy, please feel free to go to jointhenerdclan.com, aka OutlanderCastClan.com, if you're already a member there. And for now, let's get into the show.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
So believe it or not, you only get a few points when you knock out a troll on Halloween night, but when you mess up and are on the tallest tower of the school late at night, you're going to lose 50 points apiece. So Harry is really upset in this chapter because pretty much he's lost Gryffindor, 150 points. People are really mad at him. Gryffindors and the rest of the school are quite fickle at this age. For his detention, he goes to the Forbidden Forest with Hagrid. They see a dead unicorn. Things happen, and we fall in love with centaurs because they tell us more than Dumbledore does until book six.
That's true. That's a valid point. That shady Dumbledore.
Period. Analysis.
Okay. Hey, that's the end of the podcast. All right. See you guys later.
Okay.
Time to close it out.
All right. Before we get into our love for all things centaurs, especially Firenze, because he's the jam. Okay. He's the absolute jam. This, of course, starts right after the last chapter ended. I mean, it's right when they get in trouble and McGonagall catches them without the invisibility cloak, which Harry can't forgive himself about. Thank goodness, because that's a really big pet peeve of ours at the end of last chapter. Like, how the heck did Harry forget his invisibility cloak?
Right.
Don't worry, Dinafash. Harry worries about that and is stumped at himself as well. So as many of us shook our heads saying, buddy, how could you do that?
He feels Harry.
That same way. Yeah. And McGonagall, like, this is something that bothered me about McGonagall. She tells the kids, she says, okay, I also caught Neville because he was coming to warn you guys that Draco was kind of trying to get you in trouble. So let's give some props to Neville.
Yeah, good job. Okay.
Neville being brave, coming out at night. I mean, maybe he was locked out again, but he's coming
absolutely
out.
Was. You know, he forgot the password.
He's like, well, that's going to be my excuse this time. But he bravely goes out in search of Harry and Hermione, knowing the kind of adventures that they've gone on before, to warn them that Draco Malfoy is trying to get them in trouble about some dragon that they're trying to smuggle. So McGonagall catches him. He catches Harry and Hermione and tells Harry and Hermione, I know what actually happened. I know what actually was going on. You, Harry, you kids, you were trying to trick Draco Malfoy into coming out late at night so he would get caught. Mm-hmm. How dare you? I am so embarrassed that you're a Gryffindor. Like, going out in the middle of the night, what in the world are you doing? This is the worst atrocity ever. And she takes away 50 points per kid.
Yes. I've got some theories on this. I got a theory. You want a theory? You want to hear the theory?
I want to hear it because let me tell you, Harry, like, couldn't shake it. The Gryffindors were so mad at him when they woke up.
This would have been so you. You wouldn't have been able to shake it. You would have been like, I'm not doing any of that stupid stuff again.
Harry.
And then you would have jumped right back in doing it.
Harry's like, I'm ready to quit Quidditch. Like, he does. He's ready to quit Quidditch. He earned Gryffindor 50 house points, but here he has taken away 150.
Ladies and gents, that is my wife to a T.
Bam! Just like that.
I'm just going to quit everything. I can't do it anymore.
I'm so embarrassed. Lord knows what's going to happen next time. Nobody is going to forgive me. Hermione stops raising her hand in class. Okay? Hermione, who doesn't stop talking, literally stops talking because she is so upset with herself for losing house points.
Yes.
Yet, there's never a mention that these kids are like, whatevs, McGonagall. We just saved a dragon in an international, like, rescue mission.
Right.
We're pretty cool, you know?
Well, I got some theories on that, too.
Okay. So let's delve into these theories. Remembering, of course, that children are listening.
Yeah. Well, first theory. Part of me thinks that McGonagall made the excuse for Harry and Hermione, gave them the out. gave it to him. I know what you're doing. Yeah. I know what you're doing. You would try to trick Draco, and Neville fell for it.
Neville.
I don't think that you were out there actually doing dragons, even though she probably did.
Neville, who is Chosen One Part 2. Let's be real.
Yeah, that's true. No, I think she...
Hashtag Nagini.
She gave him the out so that she didn't have to expel him.
Oh,
yeah.
Hold up, though.
No.
You think this would have been expel worthy? Like the fact that kids are walking around at night. Have you ever gone to night camp?
To the highest part of the tower of the entire cast? No. It's a big deal. It's a big deal, and you know it. And the reason why.
I don't think it's expelling worthy.
I think so. Because there was an elaborate ruse, and there was an elaborate plan, and he was out with an illegal freaking dragon. Trying to release it with no adults, no permission, and it also involves Hagrid. She don't want to get Hagrid in trouble because Hagrid's a nice guy. He's just trying to do the best that he can. So she says to them, I know what you were doing. Yeah.
So you think she actually knows what they were doing?
Nothing goes past her.
Preach.
Nothing gets past her.
I'm on that train.
She's on it. You know she's on it. And the reason why I know she's on it is because she takes 50 points away from Gryffindor each.
Oh.
Meaning it's 150 fracking points
Minerva
away from Gryffindor.
Fierce.
And when it comes to Draco, she only takes away 20 points from him for being out, and he gets the detention. These three jabronis are getting 50 points each because she doesn't want anyone to question her decision making. She doesn't want anybody else to look into it. She doesn't want anybody else to think, Time out. Maybe we should be looking into this a little bit more. Maybe we should be eyeing this kid a little bit more. She's saying, no, I got it. Here's a drastic thing. 150 points, gone. See you later. That way nobody else takes a look.
Okay. It also keeps him quiet, keeps him from doing a little too many interesting things too quickly. But how, because here's the thing. Like, Dumbledore knows that he is trying to put puzzle pieces together for Harry to figure out things about Voldemort. Dumbledore's, you know, kind of like letting Harry be brave and try these things out. But Minerva isn't really in on that. So you're thinking that she's giving them 50 points each so that she doesn't have to expel them because she has a little soft spot for Harry, which would totally go in line with the fan fiction that I read.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, remember, Quidditch Die Hard. All about the Quidditch life. You can't be playing Quidditch without a seeker. Okay, that's just some of the subtext, okay? That's just a little
portion. And I love how she says, nothing gives you the right to walk around at school at night, especially these days.
Right, exactly. Woo-hoo. So I'm telling you, are you telling me that she and Dumbledore ain't having conversations about Harry? That she's not out there?
Oh, no, she doesn't. She's not on the up and up about everything at all.
Oh, I don't know.
No, she does not know everything.
I'm not saying she knows everything. But she's got to know a little something. She knows a little something.
I think that she knows very little. I think that she knows that this is a very special boy, but I think that she knows very little at this point.
I understand. And
that's where I'm at. Oh, yeah. So she has that. And really, like, nothing much happens because Harry and Hermione are just so nervous about getting in trouble.
Right. All they do is just get detention. That's it. And Angela here on
Gets detention.
Well, Angela here on Facebook saying, I totally didn't understand why detention would mean taking kids into the Forbidden Forest. It's supposed to be dangerous. This is how a school punishes kids? LOL. Mary, can you justify taking those four children and bringing them to the Forbidden Forest?
They're with Hagrid. Like, Hagrid would protect them from anything in that forest. Literally anything in that forest. Hagrid, aside from Voldemort, who's technically in the forest, Hagrid can protect them.
Yeah, and I think that there's something textual here, some textual evidence that would suggest that as well. Because Hagrid has a relationship with what we can see as centaurs.
But who gave him this detention? Because McGonagall gives it to him. McGonagall writes the note that... that they have the detention. So did she choose it, or did Dumbledore choose detention for the week? Like, how did they get to choosing detention?
That's a good question. And that seems to suggest, at least, that there's some more things happening here. Again, if Dumbledore knows that Quirrell is a little iffy, and that there's things going on, and you know that Hagrid is informing Dumbledore that unicorns are getting off, and there's unicorn blood splattered all over trees everywhere. You know that he's like, oh, wait, hold on, time out. Maybe this is what's happening.
What's interesting, though, is McGonagall lays down the law when Harry gets out of line. Even when Harry, you know, knocks a troll out, well, it was Ron. But when they do that, it's not that big of a glory thing. She's not super proud of them. And here, you know, she's not happy with them obviously being out late at night. Yet Dumbledore allows Harry to be out at night with the Mirror of Erised multiple times. Dumbledore knows that Harry does these things. We end up finding out that at the end of this chapter, Harry's invisibility cloak comes back. And what we know from prior readings is it's Dumbledore who gave it to him and now has laid it back out for him. So Dumbledore is encouraging this sneak around behavior, whereas McGonagall is not. And yet Harry stumbles upon hearing Quirrell, you know, being very, very sad and upset and, right, you know, kind of like feebly like, no, please don't make me do it again. And he comes out adjusting his turban from the room, and Harry automatically thinks that it's Snape. And he starts to tell the trio, like, we need to go tell Dumbledore what's up, because Quirrell's losing it. Quirrell's...
Right. Well, no, Hermione says we need to tell Dumbledore.
Yes, sorry. Yeah,
Ron
Hermione
says, let's go get it done. And Harry's the one that's saying, whoa, let's pump the brakes here a little bit.
And that's what confuses me, because Dumbledore is all about breaking the rules with Harry.
Yeah, but again, remember, they don't have that much of a relationship quite yet. They've only had two real interactions as of this time. So I would say, yes, Dumbledore is about breaking the rules, but Harry doesn't quite know that yet. He just knows that Dumbledore has been watching out for him. So that's where I would go with it. But there are two things. I mean, first of all, I love the fact that we remember how we talked about the trio and how they each bring something to the friendship.
Ron doesn't bring really anything in this chapter.
Well, yes, he does.
Ron and Neville become like this combined person in the movies.
That's true. That's true.
Okay, but continue.
But he does bring something, and it relates back to the kind of relationship as it formed in the beginning of the book. In the beginning of the book, in this podcast, we talked about how the three of them are each... They each have characteristics that, when they come together, form something new. So we talked about thesis and antithesis and synthesis. I actually talked about this recently on my latest book, Blake's Book Club for Midnight Sun. But the thesis would be that Hermione is one that uses her brain. She is the one who says, whoa, 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 let's slow down here. Mm-hmm. Ron is usually the emotional one. Let's go get it done. Let's get stuff done. He's always mad about something. He's upset about something. He's insecure about something. That's the thesis and the antithesis. The synthesis is Harry. Harry is the one that usually leads them out. Harry is the one that usually forms the compromise between all of them. And that is usually how they go forward together. Hermione using her brain, Ron using his emotions, and Harry being the person that brings it all together. The funny thing is, in this chapter, is that Harry doesn't do that.
No.
And that is a much larger statement on Harry's journey in this book. Harry has always been brave. Let's go. He is the synthesis, but he's moving forward together. He is the typical Gryffindor.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm the synthesis, but I'm brave about it, and we're going to move forward. In this one, he denies it. And you can see him say, I just want to stay in my own lane.
Yes.
And that is so great for this kind of story. When you have this kind of story, someone who is, let's say, the chosen one, let's just say. they go through this whole thing, and at one point they get to their lowest point, and they're given a way, they're given a route to just go back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
Just go back to what their stasis was. Remember, Harry at the beginning of the book, when he comes to Hogwarts, just wants to fit in.
That's it.
He just wants to be Harry Potter and just show up.
And he wants to be able to stay there and not go back to time with the Dursleys.
Right, but he wants to just fit in with all the rest of the wizards. Yes. He doesn't care about being Harry freaking Potter. He just wants to be a student. And here, he's given an opportunity to be a student. He looks out over the edge into the abyss and says, no. Thank you. I will turn around and I will go home. But because of that, there is real growth. And when Harry sees Quirrell and he surmises that it's Snape and eventually is put into detention and eventually goes to the Forbidden Forest, that is when Harry realizes, no, I have to move forward. I am the synthesis. I have to move forward in this, in my journey. And he then takes his journey. He's given an opportunity to go back to be
normal.
And
it snowballs as soon as he
keeps going.
Yeah, he has all this time of letting his fear hold him back, letting his fear of what is natural and right with him to hold him back, his fear of being expelled, his fear of this new home being taken away from him, his fear that his new home of Gryffindor will continue to see him in this poor light. So he does. He takes that step back until they go out with Filch for the detention. And Filch is in his glory right now. His absolute glory that he's leading these 11-year-olds out to the Forbidden Forest. He is so excited for this detention. You know, he talks about how he misses the old days when they were hung up by chains by their wrists and how he still keeps them oiled just in case they go back to the old ways of torture for detention. And, you know, it's Malfoy, Neville, Harry, and Hermione, which is different than in the movie. And they go out with Hagrid, and Neville and Malfoy split up with Fang, and Harry and Hermione are there with Hagrid. And during this time, they learn a little bit about what's kind of going on. Mm-hmm. But Malfoy, who was complaining before, like, why aren't we just doing lines? This is the worst. Why is this detention? Mm-hmm. Like, because you know what, Malfoy? You need to learn a lesson. And I don't know about y'all, but when my kids are in trouble, I make them go pick up sticks until there's no more sticks in my yard. Now, I wouldn't be taking my children into the Forbidden Forest, but then again, I'm a mere muggle. If I was a half-giant like Hagrid, you know, who pretty much nothing will bother them in the woods with, then I guess it would kind of be okay, and it would scare these kids out of their flippin' minds. Mm-hmm. Plus, Harry learned something very important in the process. But what I can't stand is that Malfoy plays a prank on Neville in the woods.
To send up the red sparks.
Because he's so scared, he sends up the red sparks. And it was just Malfoy. Like, you're in the Forbidden Forest, Malfoy. Stop being a punk.
Caitlin here on Facebook says, Filch creeps me out more in the books than in the films. You would agree with that?
Yeah.
See, I agree with you. And the funny thing is because of the films, all I see in Filch is Walder Frey, who is the same actor plays both characters from
in Game of Thrones.
From Game of Thrones.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
But I see Filch in the book as a lot more Walder Frey.
What
than
do you think
I
he smells like? I think he smells like really bad feet.
I think he smells like farts. You know he smells like farts. Like, because you know he don't drink like good milk. It's probably bad milk.
Okay, moving on.
Do you think he's lactose intolerant? He totally is. But he doesn't care.
All squibs can't handle the lactose. So they're off in the forest, and Hagrid says, like, nothing's going to touch you if you're with me and Fang, which is kind of true, I guess, but not really, because when Hagrid's not there in the future book, we see Aragog.
Yeah,
but mind you, he's not with Hagrid.
He's not with, yeah.
And then, book 7, Harry's in the woods with Hagrid. Something does happen to him. Dies.
Yeah, but that's because of Voldemort.
He's not with him.
That's because of Voldemort.
Don't worry, guys. Spoiler. But you'll be fine. Just hold on tight. Should have given a spoiler warning.
No, that's
totally
really
fine.
That's really fine. This is a spoiler podcast.
We bump into the centaurs.
By the way, are you a little annoyed that they split up Malfoy and Neville from the group? Because like it just feels like plot mechanics. That's where the book needs to go. Kind of like how they needed to get detention in order to get into the Forbidden Forest. There was no legitimate way, or there was no other clunky way to get them into the Forbidden Forest. Do you feel like it's just like that's where the book needs us to go? That's where it's placing our characters?
No. I mean, I just like it because they get to have an honest conversation with Ronan. I feel like Malfoy would have been like, who cares about Moss? Let's go. You know, like he would have just whined and been annoying during this conversation that right. we really needed to have. Whereas Harry and Hermione were able to learn with Hagrid. Harry, by the way, you want to know what Harry's afraid of in the woods?
What's that?
Werewolves. He brings it up three times. He's like, could it be a werewolf? Killing the unicorns?
Is it a werewolf?
What's that sound? Was that a werewolf?
Couldn't like, be a werewolf, right? No, like, it's not a werewolf. I couldn't be.
He's so afraid of werewolves. Little does he know, my friends.
Oh, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. There's some foreshadowing
but,
for you.
But I just loved that Harry brings it up. I'm pretty sure three times that he's like, is it a werewolf?
Well, let's talk about this real quick here. Because in this text, we are given notification that there are centaurs now. There are unicorns. Now, unicorns are a real thing. And as are werewolves. These are all magical creatures that exist outside of Hogwarts, mere minutes away from Hogwarts, as it seems.
Just the backyard.
And it also implicit in that also is that these creatures are running around in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they... And I know this is like super nerd. You know what? I'm gonna play it
right
now.
Bring it. I'm ready.
How does the author reconcile that world building? Like, there's werewolves and unicorns and dragons just roaming around, and not one muggle sees it.
Oh, honey, that's like a lot of the wizard's job is the protection.
So they just got a bunch of people running around doing the flashy thing from Men in Black.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah. And there's just like areas that muggles don't go to because they might think it's abandoned or a swamp or, you know, whatever, a nuclear disaster strike site, but really it's not.
So
I think that the wizards just like think about that. Like, think of all the places we don't go because we're like, oh, that's bad over there. Bad things have happened there and it's just zoned off. Maybe with government fencing. Like, maybe all of Hogwarts is like with government fencing.
Area 51.
Oh, my God. P.S. Can we take a moment?
Yes.
Did you see that they're legitimately saying that UFOs are like flying around the Pentagon?
Yeah, I know. Like, the United States military has come out saying, yeah, UFOs exist. Like, it's a thing.
Can we just take a moment?
I don't know why this is not a bigger deal.
It's 2020 and everyone was nervous about murder hornets, but we're talking about UFOs?
We're talking about aliens, bro.
Like, the U.S. government has no idea what's going on and they're legitimately saying there are UFOs and they have a special task force.
Not great, Bob.
No.
This should be a bigger deal.
I'm just going to tell myself it's Dementors.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's all I'm going to say. And that's why we all feel really crummy. It's not aliens. It's Dementors. We just need to eat chocolate.
And I guess the question that I have, too, here is I was driving and I was thinking about this. And because I was stuck in traffic, I got nothing better else to do. Nothing else better to do.
Hey, my mic's fixed.
Of course it's fixed. Everybody here in the chats were asking me if I fixed it for you. And I did because I'm
awesome.
And I'm Batman.
Oh.
So, yeah.
I mean, I don't like Batman.
Well, that's
I'm
okay.
Not Queen Whenever.
Yep, there you go.
Nerd!
That's a Lego 2 movie reference, the second part.
You were driving, you were bored.
I was bored, I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about the logistics of Hogwarts and how like these creatures and these magical creatures are just roaming the world. And I was wondering, does Hogwarts... Yeah, we all know that Hogwarts is in Scotland, which is fine, but... I just wonder if Hogwarts kind of exists on a parallel plane almost, where like how come Google Earth can't see Hogwarts?
Honey, that's a really easy spell.
Well, I know that, but why can't people just walk into Hogwarts? Why can't they just like when they're hiking all of a sudden, and they're like, hey, what's that building?
Sometimes it happens, and then they get confunded, and then they just go about...
No, I'm out on that.
Okay.
I'm out on that.
Well, we'll have a further discussion. Maybe after... Maybe we should have, like... You know what we should do? After the book, when we do our movie one, then we should have, like, a random theories, things we don't understand episode, mm-hmm. and then move on to the next book, and then by the end of that book, we'll have these, like, deep, how does this happen in the Harry Potter universe questions. Mm-hmm. Sound good?
I like it. I'm in. Let's do it.
Awesome. All right. So here we go. We're hanging out with the centaurs. Let's move this on, okay?
Yes.
So Ronan comes in, and he is just so not into these two humans. And he's just like, listen, you keep asking me the same question, and I keep giving you the same answer. Mars is really, really, really bright tonight. And Hagrid's like, I don't get it. So for those of you who don't understand Mars, Blake.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about what Mars, the planet, means?
I would absolutely love to do that. Mars, the planet, was named after the Roman god of war, who just happens to be named Mars. And because the planet was so...
It was named after him, and his name was... Just so happened to be Mars. No yes. kidding, Blake. If it was named after him. Well,
okay, whatevs. You know what I'm talking about. Okay, so the Roman god of war...
It was white. Name. And it just so happened to be white.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well played, Mary.
I am listening sometimes.
So, you know, it's purposeful and it's full of intent with this saying and how it's repeated not only by Ronan but by Bane as well. And...
Got some two cranky centaurs right here.
And, you know, I love how this is repeated, and I love how it foreshadows the impending war, the impending wizard's war that's coming. It foreshadows the impending war specifically between Harry and Voldemort. And if you notice, it's Ronan, or was it Bane? I can't remember which one, that looks intently at Harry's scar and says, Mars burns brightly today. And brighter than usual. There's something much larger at play to the centaurs. And having said that, it makes you wonder...
It was Firenze?
Okay, sorry. It makes you wonder what kind of things the centaurs see outside of the wizards. What do the wizards not see that the centaurs do?
Oh my gosh, Blake, the entire plot line of this story.
No, I know, but like, is their knowledge, the centaur's knowledge, more in line with like old world thinking? Mm. Like, is it knowledge that like wizards kind of forgot over time or just chose to not abide by anymore?
I think it is. It's just that old, like, here is what's going to happen, but their belief system is that we don't get involved with this. Like, this is what's happening. They are much more accurate at fortune telling than, say, professors like Trelawney.
Mm-hmm.
But exactly. So by him saying Mars is bright, and by Bane then saying Mars is really bright, that means that there is going to be violence and there's going to be bloodshed. And then, of course, they have that quote that the innocent are the first victims. And I find this so interesting because as you're looking through the entire, you know, Harry Potter series, yes, the first character that dies in this Harry Potter series is this unicorn. Is this unicorn which symbolizes like everything pure and just. And we get this whole talk about how killing a unicorn is really, you're going to be living a cursed life.
Well, the first person that we acknowledge that has died is actually Harry's mother in this book.
I know, but they were already dead by the time the book started.
No, I know, but the first acknowledgement of death, and I'm not saying that you're wrong.
No, yes,
I'm actually that illuminates.
It's also an innocent life.
It references the first innocent life that is lost within this story as we're plopped into the middle of it.
Yep.
The innocents are always the first.
And we're going to go on and have more innocent deaths throughout these earlier portions of the books before things get real. We're going to lose, of course, Bertha Jorkins. We're going to lose Cedric Diggory. There's going to be a lot of innocent lives lost. And it's very interesting because when the centaurs are talking about Mars, I'm thinking, yes, it's tonight. And yes, it's the loss of this unicorn. Yes, it's the immediate future as we're going to be heading into this conflict with Voldemort. But really, it's that grand scope. You know what you're talking about. Like, so what exactly is it? It's the grand scope that, like, there is trouble and bloodshed and death and toil coming. And it's shining very brightly because He Who Must Not Be Named is coming back to power. And when Firenze looks at Harry Potter and he sees his scar and he gives them that really big look, and as he's trying to help him, he says, you know, you are the Potter boy. The forest is not safe at this time, especially for you. So he knows, the centaurs know that Voldemort is in the forest. The centaurs know that Potter must not be in the forest right now, that right. something is going to be happening. And then Bane comes after him saying, what are you doing? You have a human on your back. Have you no shame? Are you a common mule? And Firenze quickly says to him, do you realize who this is? This is the Potter boy. The quicker he leaves the forest, the better. And when he said that, it made me think, okay, obviously they know. They know about Harry and Voldemort, whether it was the past, the future, or both. Mm-hmm. But also, does he know that Harry needs to leave this forest so that he can go stop Voldemort from getting the Sorcerer's Stone?
And also implicit in that statement, I think, is Firenze's knowledge that Harry is key to stopping Voldemort. Mm-hmm. Not just with the Sorcerer's Stone, but in general. Do the centaurs have a knowledge that Harry is, in fact, not only the chosen one, but the one that is the only person that can kill Voldemort? Do you think that
yeah,
is part of it?
Yeah, I think they know. I think
they
know.
And that's why he makes the exception for Harry, to get him on his back and get him out of there quickly, because this is right now, he's not ready. He's too young to face off in any kind of way with Voldemort.
And Firenze even says, do you not see that unicorn? Do you not understand why it was killed? Or have the planets not let you in on that secret? I set myself against what is lurking in this forest, Bane, and yes, with humans alongside me if I must. So he's given the sass right back
right.
to his elder, saying like, do you not know what it means to kill a unicorn? Do you not know who's here in the forest? Because I do. And I know that this Potter boy needs to leave it now because he's our only shot.
Right, right.
And
right.
I just loved that. I loved that he said all this to him. And not only was that enough, you would have thought that that would have been enough for Harry's head to be reeling like, oh my gosh, I'm very special. Something's in this forest that I should not be dealing with. But then he tells him more. He tells him a bit more. He tells him about, you know, drinking the unicorn's blood keeps you alive for only so long, but he lets Harry discover the secrets of what's happening.
I love the way the author writes this. Mm-hmm. She, again, has a real gift for what feels like poetry. When Firenze says, that is because it is a monstrous thing to slay a unicorn, said Firenze. Only one who has had nothing to lose and everything to gain would commit such a crime. The blood of a unicorn will keep you alive, even if you are an inch from death, but at a terrible price. You have slain something pure and defenseless to save yourself, and you will have but a half-life, a cursed life, from the moment the blood touches your lips. And Harry stared at the back of Firenze's head, which dappled his silver in the moonlight. But who'd be that desperate? He wondered aloud. If you're going to be cursed forever, death's better, isn't it? It is, Firenze agreed. Unless all you need is to stay alive long enough to drink something else. Something that will bring you back to full strength and power. Something that will mean you can never die. Mr. Potter, do you know what is hidden in the school at this very moment? Can you think of anybody who has waited many years to return to power, who has to clung to life awaiting their chance?
Like, this is a whole conversation I would have loved to have Dumbledore have with
her. Oh, man.
But on the flip side, so here he is saying all this. And centaurs, of course, they run hot and cold.
Yes.
With what wizards think of them. A lot of time, wizards just see themselves as better than elves, better than centaurs, better sure. than giants. You know, even Hermione says, who says the centaurs are right? It sounds like fortune telling. And Professor McGonagall says that it's a very imprecise branch of magic.
Does Hermione kind of putting down the centaurs bother you at all? I feel like that is something very anti-Hermione.
Hermione, as we find it in later books, is not good at fortune telling. And I think because it's something that she can't study and get better at,
yeah.
that she can poo-poo it. It's like a belief in religions. You know what I mean? If you don't believe in religions, you might easily be able to poo-poo it and say, like, whatever, mm-hmm. because it's more about these beliefs. It's about things that you can't... You can study, but it's not as tactile. It's not, you know what I mean? Sure. Like, Hermione doesn't get good at fortune telling.
It just doesn't make sense. It feels like mumbo jumbo to her.
No, and I do love that Frenzy says, good luck. The planets have been read wrongly before now, even by centaurs. I hope this is one of those times.
Absolutely.
And once again, we don't know who he is referring to. Is he referring to the immediate future? Is he referring to what's going to happen over the next several years of his time at Hogwarts?
My question to you here, Mary, is how the hell did Frenzy know that the Sorcerer's Stone was in Hogwarts?
What do you mean?
How does he know that it's there?
Because the stars have told him. He knows. He knows everything.
Are you telling me the stars sent him an email being like, hey, guess what, bro?
Yes.
I heard about the Sorcerer's Stone. You'll never guess who's got it, guy.
I think the stones have told the centaurs pretty much everything. And I think that was why Bane was like, why are you taking him out of the forest? I saw what happens to him in the forest at some point. Like, I think the centaurs know pretty much everything. And this is where I'm like, oh, Dumbledore. But on the flip side, Dumbledore then leaves Harry his cloak.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know that it's Dumbledore just yet, but we will in just a little while, so I'm not spoiling it too much.
Right.
But he leaves it firm folded up. And what does the note say?
It says, just in case.
Just in case.
That's it. And that's further proof. It is absolutely further proof that Dumbledore is engineering this path for Harry. It's not every step. It's not like, okay, you know, number one means green and number two means blue and number three means red. It's not paint by numbers, but it's a spiritual guide. It's something that is helping. A river can be split in many different directions, but it mm-hmm. always goes back to the ocean.
Yeah.
Right. So that's how I feel like. Well, that's what I feel like Dumbledore is doing for Harry.
You know, this chapter, even though Dumbledore wasn't in it at all, made me loosen my grip on my Dumbledore distaste. This is the first time reading the series that I've had a really hard time with Dumbledore, knowing how much pain he's put Harry through, keeping him with the Dursleys in such a tough situation, watching him allow all these trials occur to Harry and not allowing Harry to have just your typical growing up life. But on the flip side, Harry Potter is the chosen one. Harry Potter is the only person who can defeat Voldemort. That was said in a prophecy, and even the centaurs know it to be true. And what Dumbledore does is he knows that Harry doesn't need to face Voldemort right now. Okay, he's 11, but he needs to make sure that Harry is prepared and strong enough. And laying this all out to an 11-year-old, like, hey, little boy, I know you just found out you're a wizard, but you're actually going to have to defeat Voldemort. Like, pretty soon would blow his mind and would make him say, no, thank you. I'll go mm-hmm. back to the Dursleys as soon as possible. But what he does is he gives Harry these little bits as trials, as little places for him to learn. And it made me think a lot about, maybe think a lot about Jesus. I was sitting here driving and I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I've read this story before about like an older figure knowing that he's going to have a youngster sacrificed for the good of the world. And like the youngster has to like, you know, figure that out a little bit in his own way and be okay with it and like really be okay with it. It's not Narnia. It's not Narnia.
Which is basically a story about Jesus. So it might as well.
Yeah. But I was like, oh, okay. But through about thinking about it from that context, because it still is always Harry's choice in the end. All of these things are choices that Harry gets to make. And as the true Gryffindor that he is, mm-hmm. he does choose to be brave and to be selfless for the betterment of other people, even though it puts him at risk. And I think that Dumbledore doing this strengthens Harry. And without scaring him, he can see, without even telling Harry, oh, you need to go save the Sorcerer's Stone, mm-hmm. Harry chooses to do that. Harry can't stop himself because it is his destiny.
Right, and I think the most beautiful part about this chapter is that Harry recognizes that he must do it. But it, comes off the heels of Harry turning it away. It's Harry's choice to do so. Harry chose to say, no, I'm going to be normal. No, I want to go back to my stasis. I want to just be nothing other than Harry Potter. That's it. Yet at the end, he goes through his journey and does make the choice to be more than just Harry Potter. Although it is, and to the author's credit, again, she is incredible with this kind of, hey, look at this over here. Don't look over here. No. Look over there. Look to my left.
But I'm just going to put this in here for you for later.
But we're going to put that in there. She blames everything on Snape. And through Harry's eyes, it all makes sense. Snape wants to help Voldemort. Snape is there. But in the background, there are many more mechanics. And by the way, she tells you that it's Quirrell up front in this chapter. He's the one talking to himself and saying, no, please not again. No, I don't want to do it again. Yada, yada. And Harry just assumes that he's talking to Snape. At no point is there any textual evidence suggesting that Snape was part of that conversation. It's just Harry's interpretation.
What do you think Voldemort looks like in this form as he slithers on the ground, licking the blood off the unicorn? Like, do you picture him like a slug? Do you picture him like a snake?
Well, that's not... That's Quirrell. It's Quirrell going around, right?
Slithering. See, I liked to pretend that Quirrell, I felt like Quirrell was complaining in that room. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to try to get the stone. Please don't make me kill a unicorn. Like, please don't make me do it again. But then I pictured Voldemort being that little slithering thing under a piece of cloth, not Quirrell and Voldemort. See, I just pictured it being like slug, leech, slimy. Because let me find you talk.
When I read it, I interpreted it kind of like, remember the movie The Exorcism of Emily Rose?
No.
You don't remember that movie?
No. Did I even watch it?
Yeah, we watched it together.
I closed my eyes.
Well, there is a scene when she's like crawling, like her back
No, oh my gosh. Okay. Listen, children, listen to this.
Well, no. What I'm saying is like she is like contorted and she's like crawling up walls and like the way that she moves is like the way that it's described in this book. And I interpreted it as Quirrell slithering around on the ground like The Exorcism of Emily Rose because Voldemort is taking control of his body. That's why he's saying, no, please don't. I don't want to do it. Please don't make me do it, because he has no control over it. Voldemort allows him control when it's convenient for Voldemort, but when he needs it, he's the one who kind of possesses Quirrell and makes him act in ways that are just not humanly possible.
Because it just says a hooded figure came crawling across the ground like some stalking beast.
Yeah.
The hooded figure raised its head and looked right at Harry. Unicorn, gross, got to its feet and came swiftly towards him, but he couldn't move for fear. Blah, blah, blah. And then he gets saved. Interesting. See, I was just wondering if like a little like snaky kind of thing like came
like
off.
Crawls out.
Yeah.
But like, but the way that I hear it, it's like a hooded figure stood up.
So
like,
it's Quirrell, and he's possessed by him.
He's possessed, but it's a taller figure. It's a figure, and again, this is from Harry's perspective, so it's hard to interpret. But it feels like it's like the hooded figure towers over Harry, you know, like it's a looming presence.
Yeah,
that's much bigger than
I like your
Harry's
idea
capable.
Better than mine.
I kind of do too.
I think I picture like Voldemort from movie 4 when he's plopped into the when he's plopped into the cauldron, but like as a worm.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of out on that.
Yeah, I think I'm out now too. This makes me feel a lot better, because I've been trying to envision like what would this be like.
Wait, okay. Can you just say that again for just the sake of posterity?
No, thanks.
No, come on.
Okay, different perspective. Let's wrap this up.
All right. Holy cricket! You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger, and you are?
Well, we already pretty much did Minerva McGonagall's other perspective.
Yes.
Because that was the person that I really wanted to tackle in this podcast episode. was, what does Minerva know, and how? Why is she making these choices? So now that we've gotten her out of the way, did you have anyone else that you wanted to
do? I kind of want to do Quirrell.
Go for
it. The way that it sounds is that Quirrell, he's infected. It's a parasite. And Voldemort is sucking the life out of Quirrell.
So gross.
And Quirrell wants, even though he's been shackled with Voldemort, he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to. He doesn't.
I'm picturing Gollum, you know, and he's like, "No, yes, go get my precious." No,
right,
no.
Exactly. Yes,
Frodo's my friend. No, he's not.
Yes, absolutely.
Eat the fat one. Or yeah. That's what I'm picturing.
Oh, hobbitess.
You're right. It's like the Gollum conversation happening in Hogwarts with a turban.
And
okay.
I think Quirrell knows what's happening is wrong. I think what Quirrell knows is that Voldemort, I think Quirrell probably allowed it because Voldemort or something made him believe that things were going to be different. That he didn't know the real repercussions of what was going to happen. That's why he kind of was on board, because I don't see this kind of relationship being established between Voldemort and Quirrell without some kind of consent, without some kind of acknowledgement that, yes, you will be part of my essence. And in through that essence, I will gain more ability. I will gain more knowledge. Remember, Quirrell's a Ravenclaw. He wants the sake of knowledge. Mm-hmm. He wants to exist on that plane so he can do it for the sake of doing it.
Yeah.
And maybe it's more along the lines of, I want a better understanding of the dark arts because that's my goal. That's what I want to do. And it didn't feel malignant the way that it has become. So that when Quirrell is saying, no, please don't. I don't want to do it. I don't want to be here. I don't want these things to happen. This is him finally realizing this is way worse than what it needed to be. And I don't want to be a part of it anymore. And that's why Voldemort takes control of him and makes him do the whole Emily Rose, blah, 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 you know, thing. That's what I feel like is happening. So what do you think?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting.
All right. Well, we don't have any email questions, but I will play the sound.
Oh, Miles here.
All right, so those who are live, please, if you do have questions for Mary and I, put them on in the chat, in the comments. We will take a look at them, and we will read them. If you want to send your questions to us, you can do so ahead of our episodes. Just email them to maryandblakemedia@gmail.com or go to maryandblake.com and just hit the contact button. You'll see a little entry form that says what your email address is, what your topic is, and send us the questions.
I remember we would love just to have just some fun, foolish questions in regard to the Potterverse. So for tonight, my question was, Blake, what would you be most afraid of in the Forbidden Forest?
Ara-freaking-gog.
Aragog.
There's nothing else in this world.
You have to say it like Slughorn. Oh, no, like
Aragog. Aragog.
After he took the venom. You don't mind, do you?
You know, for academic purposes,
yes,
only.
Yes, of course.
Aragog.
So that's what you'd be afraid of?
Oh, yeah. No, nothing else in this world scares me more than spiders. Mm. Nothing. Nothing. Like, especially that time that there was a spider above our bed. And I tried to go kill it, and Mary was laughing, and she's like, oh, go get it, go get it, blah, 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 blah. And I was paralyzed. I tried to kill it, and the freaking spider jumped at me and landed in our bed, and all I wanted to do was cry, and Mary laughed.
Non-stop.
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 I don't know what I would be afraid of in the Forbidden Forest.
What?
R.U.S.s.
What?
Rodents of unusual size. It's from The Princess Bride, Blake. Where have you been?
Oh, okay.
But I feel like there's R.O.U.S.s in the Forbidden Forest. I feel like there's so many creepy, crawly things inside there that we don't even know. We can't even glimpse how many magical creatures are in there. But yeah, I think I'd be cool pretty much with spiders.
Yep.
I'd be pretty cool with spiders.
Spiders that can eat you in one bite.
I'd be okay with werewolves because I'd be like, oh, and I probably wouldn't howl because that'd be a bad idea. Giants, Whatever. I would just carry around a bicycle bell and I'd be fine. But ROUSs, I picture, would exist there.
Tammy says, I'm with you, Blake. Anything with more than four legs. Yeah. Anything with more than four legs, or better yet, no legs. If you don't got legs and you move, nope.
I'll take out my Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them book and see if there's any creatures in there that do scare me a lot.
Heather Wilson asks, be honest, would you want to befriend the creatures in the Forbidden Forest, or would you be intimidated or frightened initially? You are 11 years old, remember? So, Mary, would you want to befriend any of the creatures?
No, not 11. I mean, I'm not even like that big of a creature person now.
I feel like I would hear about the centaurs and I'd be like, I gotta go talk to those guys.
Yeah, you're right. I'd go explore and
take some peyote and just chill.
I wouldn't want to. I'd like to see hippogriffs.
The look that you just gave me was great.
I'd like to see hippogriffs. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't see a thestral yet. I have not been in that situation where I would be able to see thestrals yet.
Rebecca says, what mythical creature would you want to be in the Forbidden Forest?
What creature would I want to be?
Yeah.
Oh. I probably honestly would just want to be like an owl of some sort. I don't know if there's wild phoenixes, but I would like to just fly. So if something scary did come, I could fly away.
I'm kind of in on the flying game as well.
Maybe a hippogriff so that way you're a bit bulkier.
Yeah, so you have a little bit more meat to you.
Yeah, you're like, come at me, but don't, because I'm going to fly away.
Yeah.
If you do.
And I'll peck you to death with my massive beak.
No, or you can hit him.
My claws.
Yeah. Okay, let's wrap this
up. I'm kind of in on the hippogriff. If not the hippogriff, centaur.
Okay.
Because, you know...
I feel like you would not get along well with centaurs, though.
Why do you say that?
I feel like you would just mock it.
I don't think so.
I don't think you'd believe in it. I think you would mock it. Because I see centaurs as, like, the hippie people. Like, the really, really hippie people.
No. Centaurs are so far hippie, you're like, dude, you gotta be right. You have to be right, because you are that crazy that you have to be right.
Listen, I know some... I'm going to show you some people that I know that I don't think you would believe them.
All right. Ellen asks, what do you think Malfoy said to the Slytherin common room after his detention? Or do you think he just kept his detention experiences on the down low? That is a great question. My initial thoughts on this is that he kept it on the down low. He didn't say a word. Didn't say a word.
Because he had to hang out with three Gryffindors.
And he's scared. He doesn't want anybody to know that he's scared.
He had to go change his undies.
He didn't want anybody to know that he was out there and he was...
frightened.
Just, like, he... Remember, his family is all about looks and his family is all about their stature. If they don't have the stature...
He probably doesn't let anybody know he has detention, period. Like, in general. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean, detention is kind of like a badge of honor almost. I'll be fine with that.
Nuh-uh. It costs you points.
Yeah, but do you think they really care about that?
This is Slytherin,
yeah, okay.
Okay, let's wrap this up, Blake.
All right, fair enough.
Okay, so guys, we only have a couple more chapters left. Get to reading. We'll be joining you.
Here's a question for you, Mary.
Yes.
Do you want to do... We're going to do an episode about the film. Do we want to do a live stream?
Let's get back to this.
Okay, fair enough. If you guys want us to do a live stream, you vote for it. You tell us in the comments.
Like, we have children.
We do, but we'll put them to bed, and hopefully they'll stay in bed. Victoria Larkin, there is a Thestral Patronus?
Did not know that that was a thing.
I did not know that that was a thing either, but...
What a dark Patronus.
But that's the emo Patronus.
Yeah.
That's the... Yeah. Oh, man. All right, let's close this bad boy out.
I'm so emo. My Patronus is a thestral.
I wish your heart was as black as my thestral Patronus. All right, let's do it.
Is there anything in the Google Doc that you would like me to say, Blake?
Oh, sorry. There we go. No. Nothing in particular. Sorry.
Well, we want to take this moment to thank all of you who have joined us live. Remember, we do go live every Monday and then either Wednesday or Thursday of the week. We're really, really excited to be wrapping up this book and then moving on to the movie discussion. Please take a moment to write a review and add some 5 stars to your podcast app for the Potterverse.
Yeah, we got a few more recently that were pretty awesome. I think we're up to 50 now. We are almost at our goal of 55. So here's what I'm going to say. One person within now between 60 will get a free choice of any of their products from the Mary and Blake store.
Yay!
One item from the Mary and Blake store, one person between numbers 50 and 60 will get one. So get on there, give us a good review.
Thank you, everybody. And for now, my name's Mary.
And don't forget to go to the jointhenerdclan.com and check out my Blake's Book Club for Midnight Sun. Because I know you're all dorks, and I know you're all reading Midnight Sun.
You all want to know life from Edward's perspective.
And you don't want to miss out on my thoughts on this, because they're awesome. Just like me. My name's Blake.
Ah, the ever humble Blake. Mischief managed.
Slytherin's fracking rule.